up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. To the Moon is the game for this week's episode. To the Moon is a narrative adventure game, and definitely a lot of comparisons with A Space for the Unbound, which is a game that we've had on the podcast a while back, certainly with story, narrative telling, things like that, as well as games like Gris or Gree. Saturday Morning RPG, definitely some similarities there, as well as a lot of the storytelling with Time Spinner. The game was originally released in November of 2011 on PC. In January of 2014, it came to Mac and Linux. In May of 2017, it came to mobile. And in January of 2020, it came to Switch. And then finally, in October of 2024, so fairly recently, it eventually came to PS5 and Xbox Series X and S. The game was developed by Freebird Games, which is a small team from Canada, mainly centered around one person, Khan Gao. He does a lot of the development. He does a lot of the composing of the music. So he's essentially a one-man person, although the team has grown over time. And for this game, something that was interesting is Khan definitely cited his inspiration for the story from things that were going on in his life, family, illnesses, and just about mortality in general. So I really connected with that. But this developer, I think before this game, really did a lot of PC-only games. They were built with RPG Maker. But this game has two sequels. I think they're sequels, or maybe it's a shared universe. But those sequels that were developed after, I think, are only available on PC, Mac, and Linux. Really not all of these are coming to console. And in fact, it took a while for it actually to come to PlayStation, which is eventually where I played it. The game was self-published on PC, I believe, and I think the Mac and Linux was as well, but I think they were made available through Humble Bundle. The Switch and mobile versions were published by XD Network. Never heard of them. I think they also were involved in publishing the sequels to this game. And then the PS5 and Xbox versions, that was published by Serenity Forge, which we've heard of before. Most notably, they published Death's Gambit. The game had a physical release in February of 2021 through Limited Run, and that was just a Switch version, and they did a standard with just the box and a deluxe version that had like a plushie, a poster, and all kinds of other crazy stuff. And the game had DLC. There are two of these mini-sodes or mini-episodes that I think are like post-game events after you beat the game. So the first one was released in 2013 and the second one in 2015, and I don't think these are available on console either. So a lot of that extra stuff, whether it's the sequels or whether these mini-sodes, are really just available to PC, Mac, and Linux. So I was looking around Reddit to see if I could access it with the version that I bought on PlayStation, and I don't think I can. So I might wind up watching a YouTube video of those, although I would like to play them. The game released at a price point of $9.99. I think the Switch version is $11.99. I don't know why that's the only version that is a bit higher, but that's what I saw it at on the Nintendo Store. And those limited run versions, the standard was available for $30, and the deluxe was available for $65. I am seeing the deluxe version on like Amazon and Walmart for like $180. I don't know how they got access to it or if they were just part of the distribution, but now them jacking up the price is kind of not cool. The game has a runtime somewhere in between 3 and 5 hours. The game is linear, but if you take some time to do the puzzles or explore a little more, or even some of the mini games at some point, you might take close to 5 hours. The game does not have a platinum trophy for our PlayStation listeners. I was kind of bummed about that, but I have been playing it on PS5. I got it on sale for $7.99. And I beat it in just under 5 hours, maybe split across 2 days, I think maybe just 2 sessions. And I hadn't really heard about this game. I saw it on a recent sale. It seemed interesting. I really was taken by the graphics because it looks very retro, like 16-bit RPG. But honestly, the music and some of the dialogue humor that I saw, I think in some of the trailers, really got me. So $7.99, no big deal. Bought it, and then I just finally decided to dive in. Let's talk gameplay for To the Moon. So this is a top-down adventure narrative game. Some light exploration, some light puzzling, but honestly, overall very minimal gameplay. So that really isn't going to be the highlight, but we'll get through some of the basics here now. So like I said, a top-down angle, like you can move your character around, but you'll sometimes be behind something or sometimes there'll be a specific slot to go through with spacing. It reminds me a lot of kind of like Secret of Mana or a lot of those old 8 or 16-bit RPGs, just where like you're moving kind of one space at a time. And so you're moving your character. Sometimes you have a second character following you around and you can move one space at a time or you can hold it and move a little faster. There's weird spacing stuff because sometimes there'll be obstructions or sometimes you can't get behind a chair or sometimes a chair is blocking you. Sometimes you can walk through the chair. There is some inconsistencies there. So it's really going to be trial and error with lining up how to navigate through different things or what you can and can't walk through. It can be a little frustrating at times, but you're not really doing any like timed walking around or navigating, so it's really at your own pace. Your character can move at 2 speeds, but you don't dictate it. Sometimes you're in an area that I guess is a little bigger, and your spaces will be moved a lot faster. The pace of your movement will be faster. And then other times when you're kind of walking around in a smaller area and you have to explore and interact with things, they'll move at a slower pace. I don't know the consistency of this, but I liked the moments where I was moving faster because they seemed less labored. And you're going to be interacting with a lot of things. Now, there's no prompts for what you're interacting with. So it's really just trial and error with figuring out what you can interact with, whether it's people or characters that you're talking to, or whether certain things on a table or certain things to read or bookcases. There's really no specific rule set for what is interactable and what isn't, but you will need to find things to interact with in order to progress, which we'll talk about. And then so, of course, also accessing the things to interact is going to require you to get the right spacing or walk behind certain things. So a lot of your annoyances that might be minor are just going to be logistics of getting around an area and figuring out how and what to interact with. So let's talk about the progression in this game. It is linear. It is 100% a linear game, but a lot of times you're going to be in these like mini sandbox areas or small areas that you can walk around and explore, but that are gated. And in a lot of these instances, you're going to have a goal or a trigger that'll allow you to progress. And sometimes this will be just navigating to a specific location where like a cutscene or dialogue will happen, or you'll have to interact with specific things. You might have to collect a certain number of interactions in a given area. And then sometimes you'll collect those interactions and actually have to solve a little puzzle. But then a lot of times you'll wind up in these auto story moments that'll just kind of progress. You will be reading dialogue and you do have to hit when the dialogue moves to the next thing. So at any point, like you could put the controller down and the game will just stop when a dialogue box comes up and you won't have to worry about even pausing it. But I think there are some options or settings that you can change that will speed up the dialogue or go without you needing to prompt it. But a lot of times you're going to be in these sort of automatically moving things. The game has three acts, and I would say the first is probably the most structured, where you're doing the most. A lot of times in the first act, you're going to be, like I said, collecting these sort of interactions. You're really collecting these five orbs to unlock this puzzle that would allow you to progress onto the next scene or the next moment in time. And you're going to be finding those by interacting or exploring with the area. Again, sometimes you'll just be navigating to a specific location and you'll get one of those orbs. Sometimes you'll need to talk to someone or interact with an object. But a lot of times it's just going to be finding story-relevant things for whatever context is going on through the dialogue. So it should pretty much make sense what you're looking for, or sometimes you could just blindly be moving around and you'll get an orb just by exploring. But either way, it's very limited and very gated, the possibilities. And then when you complete these collections of these orbs, you'll have to go to sort of like a puzzle. And this is really the most gameplay aspect of the game. The puzzle is going to open up on a screen, and it's kind of like a numbered square grid with a picture behind it. And essentially what you have to do is clear all of the tiles so that you can visibly see the picture, and that'll complete the puzzle. You'll have boxes that are different tiles, and some of the tiles will exist as clear already, or sometimes they'll be opaque and have like a little glitch through them. You'll get a starting layout for the puzzle, and essentially you'll have to clear it in a certain number of moves. What's interesting about these puzzles are that you can only flip a whole row or a whole column, and there's even one option to flip a diagonal. But the way that it works is, think the game like Othello. Basically, you're flipping all of the tiles in that row or in that column, regardless of whether they're clear or opaque. So there's going to be a lot of positive, negative, trying to figure out or strategize. But what's interesting is it counts the number of moves that you're taking. And on the screen on the right, it'll say ideal and then like a number that is like the ideal number to figure it out in. So a lot of the early puzzles might have ideal 2 or ideal 3. And that just means like you have to do it in 2 moves or 3 moves. And this is just trophy length. This isn't like a requirement. You can actually take as many moves as you want. But I definitely wanted to get the trophies for all of this. They do get more complex. It starts out with like a 3x3 grid, but then eventually you'll get to like 5x5 or even maybe 6x6, I'm not sure. But a lot of these do get more complicated. You'll get like ideal 5 or ideal 6, so it'll take 5 or 6 moves to get it. But it is a nice little challenging puzzle thing, like just trying to figure out deductive reasoning, like if I do a diagonal here, that'll make it so that this will be easy. I can flip this row and then all of them will be gone. It just takes time. I think they start out pretty easy, but there were a couple of them that took me about 5 minutes to just look at it, because you don't want to do a move until you're sure what you're doing, because then that'll mess up potentially the number of ideal moves to get that trophy. And just as you're going through this game, the driving force is really going to be story implications. So we just talked about puzzles. There's a bunch of them in the game, but that's not really how you're understanding what to do. It's really just getting zoned in on the story. There's really minimal decision making in terms of what you're doing, like the dialogue and what the characters are talking about, and even what they're doing to progress, like when you reach a certain point, is really out of your control. So you're just following what the characters are doing. Again, sort of that auto traversal progression. It's just happening. You're not really doing anything major to make it happen. But like I said, you will be in these sandboxes, and they do have barriers that kind of limit the scope of where you're able to explore at times. There will be arrows that are like at the edge of screens if you need to go to another screen. And that's always helpful to see because if you're exploring, trying to collect something and you're not finding anything in the area you're currently at, once you see that arrow, that says to you like, okay, there's another area. I'll probably find the other things in that area. I will say overall, minimal time lost or searching. I don't think it's easy to get lost in this game. I think the sandboxes are small enough and the things that you have to do are basically just walk around and interact with stuff. I did not find myself like sitting there scratching my head like, what do I do at any point in this game? There are a couple moments that do have some choices, it seems, but I don't think they really have any kind of consequences. I don't think that you're going to miss anything in this game, aside maybe from the trophy stuff with the puzzle challenges. There might be times where you can progress, but there might also be like another round of dialogue that a character might have, and you might miss that. But honestly, you're not really going to miss much. It's just like an extra thing to say. If you really do like the story and are engaged with the characters, I would encourage you to like max out dialogue and just hear from everyone before you progress. And in terms of accessibility, like I said, little to no missing. Most dialogue must be seen, so you're not really missing major story moments or anything like that. And of course, the trophy puzzles, it's irksome that there's no chance to retry. Like, I did mess up on some of the early puzzles in the game, so I think I'm going to have to, like, restart the game to get that trophy. But honestly, a lot of the trophies are a bit lenient. Like, I did get the trophy for solving all of the puzzles in the ideal number, when even though I missed, like, the first two. So I don't know what if there's bugginess there. There is a menu, and throughout the game, you will get sort of notes on things, and so you'll have like an encyclopedia of those notes, like talking about different characters or different objects in the game that have significance, so you can always pull up that menu and check those out. And the game saves automatically, but there is a manual save, and you can save at any time, and it'll just bring you right back to where you are. So I like this. This is really good for just playing, and if you need to pop out, you can just manually save and come right back. So definitely shout out to manual saves. Let's talk about the vibe of To the Moon. So this is everything. This is why I got hooked on this game, why I love this game. It is all about the vibe of this game. And really, it starts with the music. The music is absolutely magical and transformative. The moment that you hear some plucks on the piano or some ballads, like, you're just so invested. And what I like is this guy, Ken Gao, he wrote the majority of it, who is also like the lead director and developer. And so just having him be involved on both sides, the musical side and the entire game, is really advantageous, I feel. But what you're going to hear a lot is a lot of piano ballads, some strings sometimes, maybe some guitars. I don't know. I can't pick a lot of things out. I don't know if it's like a harp or an acoustic guitar or some violins at times. But just so many beautiful ballads, so much emotion in the music of this game. Moments of joy, elation, longing, deep connection remind me so much of A Space for the Unbound, with just what the music is able to do in terms of plucking at your heart as you're reading dialogue or understanding the story scenario. So a lot of similarities there. I feel like the music is what does the heavy lifting in this game for the setting of the feel and the emotional context, just moment to moment. There's something so intentional and intricate about how the music is choreographed with the game and the story moments as they're unfolding. I mean, even to the point of like a note, and just like when a certain dialogue comes up, how things shift, or all of a sudden, like, we have a vibe of like something's amiss or something's wrong or something can be eerie. You are at the mercy of how the music is making you feel at any given moment. And it's very rare to see such consistency with the music and the intertwine of the story. I just feel like the synergy is so on point, and just leaves you at the whim of whatever emotions are coming next. And so let's talk about sort of the themes that we're going through in this game and some of the settings. Real heavy topics for me. Anytime you have an idea of like memories and love and potentially time travel. And these are really heavy things that weigh on me. So obviously in this game, that's coming up because as we talk about the setting, basically what is going on in this game is there are two doctors that are like scientists. I believe it's probably like the near future. And these two individuals, their job or their purpose is essentially for a company to do some kind of inception-like thing for dying individuals. And basically what their job is, they have this high-tech machine and they put helmets on people, and basically they're going into someone's memories to make slight alterations, maybe in their early memories, to incite some kind of change in this person, or at least what they remember about themselves or their life. And essentially they're going in to grant a wish for this person. So it's this weird combination of Inception and like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. But of course, they can't change who they are as a person. They can't change things in reality. But basically, their goal is to go in and change something in their memory, in their most recent memory of themselves, to like incite emotion or something that they wanted. So really interesting concept. And what really drives through the story is this character investment, because you're going through this character's memories, you're looking at cause and effect, you're going backwards in their memory. So it's really interesting just seeing how the story progresses in a backwards direction and what you're discovering. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of the feel of like The Notebook, and I don't want to get too much into it. But there's some other things going on, like these doctors, their character, who they are. It's really interesting because they're going through and they're in the memories, they're present and trying to fix things or change things. But there's also this question of like, they have the power to change or erase certain things about this person's memory. So there's maybe a morality argument in there somewhere. And the game addresses it. It doesn't like sidestep it or just plop it in front of you. It's really interesting. It's also the presence of things like illness and, you know, people having disorders. We talked about Kan Gao and sort of his inspiration about things from his life inspiring him to write this story. And the game has twists and turns. Very Space for the Unbound, again, because at times, like, you don't know what is being implicated in this moment. And there are times where it just feels like a fork in the road and things happen and something changes, the music changes, and all of a sudden your mind is thinking about, where could this go? Like, there are some crazy directions that this could go from here. And there are some dark moments. I don't want to get any spoilers in here, but sometimes, you know, they discover something that's a little dark and a little, you know, potentially disturbing. But other times, really cute full circle moments as you're going through and seeing like where things originated from as you're going back in memories. A lot of aha moments. And the game has so many moments of levity and silliness. Like the relationship of these two doctors and the banter that they go back and forth with, this is definitely going to make you laugh a lot. And a lot of just recalls and poking fun at different pop culture media. There are some definitely inside jokes for different things, whether, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, whether it's different TV shows or other things that were going on at certain times. And at times there's some breaking the fourth wall cheekiness that I find really fun. A couple that my wife pointed out that I didn't even realize as we were playing. But what's really interesting is the silliness and the levity juxtaposed with the emotion of what's going on in the story is very interesting, because they present these two characters, these two doctors, as observers, as like kind of going through. But then you realize that they're also like a part of this experience, and them and their relationship and their banter, there becomes some kind of synergy or investment of them in what's going on in the story and how it's affecting them and the way that they behave and the decisions that they're making. And I also think there's implications for this in the sequels. I haven't played them, and I think the episodes after the sort of minisodes are about these two characters, but their story and who they are and their growth as characters from experiencing this and doing this job is also very interesting. In a lot of ways, the fact that they are the observers and they're kind of providing that breaking the fourth wall cheekiness is interesting, because you're witnessing the story with them and their presence is sort of allowing the story to be told just as is without any like spoon feeding. But them existing is also interesting because they're kind of filling in the gaps and they're having the same realizations that you are. But then you also realize that they are another dimension of what's going on in this game. So it's really interesting, almost, you know, weirdly meta. But I think it's really nice that they allowed the story to be told just as it was, instead of like you getting confused or you not understanding like the connections. They're making some of the connections, but again, I still don't feel like it's spoon-fed to you. I feel like it's a nice synergized way that's naturally having you and them have similar realizations, but then you're understanding that they're also part of the game. And then finally, let's talk about the visuals. So the game is super pixelated. Again, think like Secret of Mana and other like 8 or 16-bit RPGs of that era. Colorful sprites and environments, very colorful, a lot of greens and blues. Good expression on the characters. At times you'll see their eyes kind of move back and forth, or like the timing of their eye movement kind of gives you like a feel of an eye roll, like you're really getting that attitude from the characters and their physical display. Like I said, the environment, a lot of greens and blues and different shades. I did struggle a little bit with this because as you're walking around, we talked about there being obstructions or things in your way. I struggle with this consistently because some of the plants and shrubs are kind of green and look the same as like the grass. And sometimes you can walk through these things, sometimes you can't. So just the inconsistency of that was a little bit of kind of a headbutt. And at times there are cliffs and edges that you'll see. And then of course there being arrows that are helping you know that like, hey, you can go to another screen up this way and explore more. That's always good. I feel like there's an interesting use of height and depth. It's interesting because you have a top-down view of the game, but a lot of the moments will occur at like the edge of cliffs. So you will see off the cliff, you'll see the night sky or the day. And so that's really interesting how they pose that despite being a top-down game. And there's also a use of like haziness or blacking things out. So like when you're going back in memories, there'll be outlines of different NPCs that are walking around. And if they're nobodies, like you'll just see them in static. And then your characters, the doctors, as they're going through some of these memories, like they have powers, they can make themselves invisible to whoever else is there. So you'll see them kind of hazed out a little bit. So visually, there's that idea of like who's in the scene, who's not, who's important. So you do feel that variation. It feels similar to things like Braid or even sometimes in Space for the Unbound, if someone wasn't there or if someone's removed, or in Braid, like if something is dependent on time or dependent on outside of that, like there's a different shade or a different variation visually. But overall, I feel like visually it's a cute 8 or 16-bit sprite feel, and it really brings back some of that retro charm just visually as you're playing through. Let's wrap up the conversation about To the Moon. So this is a breathtakingly emotional journey that is crafted with such love and care. Again, similar to what I said with A Space for the Unbound, this is a master class of story pacing, of choreographed, heart-melting music, and this balance of meaning and levity kind of back and forth. And it's all coordinated in this finely synergized experience that I feel like is just really well put together. It's not gameplay heavy, but it's also not a walking simulator. I mean, I've played games that are walking simulators, like Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. Again, great story in that game, but I just felt like all I was doing was just moving forward. Similar things here, but there are some puzzles. There are even some mini games at times that are trophy related. So you are doing things that are gameplay related, but it's definitely not a gameplay heavy game. I still felt active in the story, maybe a little less than Space for the Unbound, because Space for the Unbound had like side quests or a lot of other mini games you could play. So maybe a little less than that. But I do feel like I was constantly engaged, whether through emotion, through humor, through puzzles. And I really just feel like this is a game for anyone. And I was surprisingly invested for a game that I spent less than 5 hours in. And I feel like that's something that's very difficult to do. And I recently, I was just talking to my wife about this and thinking about my parents and them not really understanding games or not really playing games, at least from a storytelling perspective. And I feel like this would be a game that would be interesting to get them to play, to understand like the impact of a story in a game and the agency as you're the player. And I really feel like it would be a nice window into our world as gamers and maybe people of older generations who don't quite understand how we are connected, and that it's not just like a thing to busy your mind with or get distracted in, but actually like you're getting something really powerful. And for this game to be able to do that in 5 hours, invest you in characters and really take you on a journey, I feel like that is just very impressive, and honestly a testament to what this medium can do for storytelling in such a bite-sized experience. In terms of value, I think $10 is so good for the value of this game for an MSRP. I don't even think it needs a sale. I'm glad I got it on sale for $8. I think it is so worth it. I'm not really sure why this Switch version is $12 as opposed to $10. That's sort of a Nintendo thing maybe. And I am a little irked that there's not a platinum. I'm a big trophy hunter and I even missed one of them, so I might not even get all the trophies in this game. But that's my problem. That's not something that everybody's going to have an issue with. I do feel like as I've closed this game and moved away from it, this will be an experience and a story that sticks with me, and I think that anyone playing will feel the same, regardless of how much gaming experience you have. So maybe this is a nice segue for anyone into games to understand that there's story and that you can really have an impactful experience from this. So in all honesty, I highly recommend this game to anyone and everyone, whether you're even a gamer or not, because you will get a lot from this and it'll impact you, maybe even in your life. And so I highly recommend this game. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.